Thank you. 909 quickly to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. How you doing, Colin?
How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. I know you take things to heart in the city, as do we all, and I know you had to be hurt and upset by what happened on Bourbon Street. Let's go back for people that are talking about
devastated.
The people that are talking, because you take it personally, as do all
I
of
do.
Us. Right. I know
yep.
you do. Let's talk about wedge barriers, archer barriers, bollards. When it comes to putting a plan in place, like for New Year's Eve, I don't know what you can talk about, what you can't, but what does that look like? Does Homeland Security sit down with NOPD, with FBI, with whomever? I don't want you to give anything away, but I just wonder for people that have questions about the planning process on what the situation was going to be for New Year's Eve, what goes into that traditionally?
Yeah, I mean, we have a well-established plan for an interior and exterior closure of the French Quarter area from Canal Street to St. Anne, typically on Bourbon Street, where most of the, you know, the pedestrian area, and it's one block up and one block down, Dauphine to Royal, on all the cross streets between there from Iberville to St. Anne. And it's well established, and I think we need to look at what happened on New Year's, clearly.
So when it comes to, and I don't, just having emceed with Monica Pierre, the New Year's festivities down there when the thing drops, was there something that would have prevented something like this from happening at midnight on Decatur Street?
Yeah, that's a whole different setup, and there was, you know, hundreds of police down there as well with traffic blocked. The amount of traffic that comes in there, it has a calming effect on the ability of somebody to do something like that as well. And so, yeah, it would have been difficult, if not impossible, for somebody to do that. But look, I mean, as we've seen, if someone is committed to do something horrific like this, they're going to find a way, you know, and if it wasn't going to be Bourbon, it could have been Canal, it could have been Frenchman, it could have been, you know, possibly Decatur. It's the lone wolf person that is willing to do this and sacrifice their own life to do it is a very difficult thing to try and protect from.
And Governor
but
Jeff,
I think there's more that we can do.
Governor Jeff Landry himself said that, and I agree, and that's why I brought up having been down there, Colin, on what did I just say? Decatur, right? Where the festivities.
On Decatur.
Yeah, Decatur. And knowing how thickly people were packed in there. And again, at midnight as opposed to 3:15 a.m. Let's talk about bollards, wedge barriers, and archer barriers, because I think people lump all three together. They are not. If you could give me, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but a quick differentiation on what the three of them are.
So the bollards are the systems that are in between each intersection on Bourbon Street. We had a system called the Matador system, very robust system that's been in place since 2017. However, that system, while very, I think, very robust and works very well in certain situations, on Bourbon Street, it was a real problem. We would have, almost from the beginning, very serious issues with trying to keep them clean underneath from where the tracks that they operated and slid open and closed were on. And so it would not only be an issue where closing them at night at 7 p.m. would be a problem because of just the sheer amount of debris that we would nightly get into these things. Other situations that were even as bad would be in the morning at 4 a.m. when sanitation and water trucks and delivery vehicles start coming in at 4 a.m., we wouldn't be able to get them open. And so it would just create a huge problem. And so, you know, obviously the pandemic kind of slowed things down a little bit as far as budgets and the ability to do some of the things we wanted to do. But there is a new system that is getting put in place that is drop-in bollards. And look, it's low technology compared to what's out there, but we also have to look at the environment of Bourbon Street that we have to work with. And so I think we're going to review, obviously, what was purchased, you know, and I think that there's more work to do on that, but we're going to continue to do that.
Let me drill down on the bollards for a second, if I can, Colin, yeah. Because Ronald Surpass last week told me, and I don't know how long ago this was, but when he was walking a beat, Ronald Surpass, former and superintendent, that they would carry the bollards and put them down. Is that what you're talking about going back to?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. not necessarily carrying them, but at least something that can be dropped in. And he's exactly right. And I remember it too from 28 years ago walking on Bourbon Street, that we had a drop-in system. Sometimes sanitation would carry them on the last trash run of the day at 7 p.m. and drop them in as they cleared each intersection. And I mean, that's what we're talking about now. And you know, people may have concerns about that. We're going to let these experts that are coming in that the federal government has authorized us. And if there's another solution, then we have to do it. And I think that could be also, you know, large trucks. That's part of the current plan. Whether it be dump trucks or large, we have LMTV high water vehicles that we use for hurricane season that we can put out there. But we're going to make sure that however we need to, that we're going to guard those intersections. But I would also add that there's a layered system of protection that a lot of people have talked about and I've seen reported in the media, and that's what we do. And what that involves is the archers and the wedges. Those are placed typically a block up and a block down on each intersection up and down Bourbon Street from Iberville to St. Anne. And what that does is it limits the amount of traffic that can even come into Bourbon Street. You're talking about public safety vehicles, potentially some delivery vehicles, but typically at night they're not able to come in there, and then hotel guests, and those are all at checkpoints at each of those intersections. And so you're already bringing down the amount of traffic that can even cross Bourbon Street and then potentially get onto Bourbon Street. And even if they can, they can't make that turn at more than 10 to 15 miles an hour.
So when we talk about the drop-in bollards and the reviewing maybe what it was agreed upon to buy, and people, y'all can look this up if you like, because I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the ratings on these things. But are you talking about, would there still be an S30, for example, 30-mile-an-hour impact bollard that could be dropped in, that can be carried, or that would involve machinery? I'm just wondering, Colin, not to get too technical,
right.
But
my understanding is the pockets that have been put into the street can support a 10, a 20, a 30-mile-an-hour bollard. The difference is that the 10 weighs about 45 pounds, which can be installed by one person picking them up. The 20-mile-an-hour is about 88 pounds, and I'm estimating here, but basically about 80 pounds. So you're getting along the edge of what one or two people potentially can put in place. You know, there's multiple at each intersection. And then when you get into the 30 pounds, you're up above 100 pounds, which they evidently have been telling us would need some sort of truck with a telehandler or some sort of lift system to put those in place. So again, the higher you go, the more coordination and effort it takes to put those in. But we're going to look at all of that.
Let's move on to these wedge barriers, because they go up, they go down. It's almost like a ferry ramp, right? In 2 to 5 seconds, I guess it's a hydraulic ram that powers these things?
Correct. It's a battery-actuated hydraulic system inside the apparatus that lifts a plate steel gate up to about 45 or 50 degrees and then prevents vehicles from entering in. And it's placed in the middle of the street. Those are important because those can be manned by one person, a police officer or even a police recruit if needed, and they can operate that for a public safety vehicle. The issue with any bollard system that you're going to have is if there is a fire on Bourbon Street, that's an automatic two-alarm response. We know how fast the quarter could go up if something happened. Those fire trucks, those EMS, the police, if some big incident happens, they need to get down that street immediately. And so what we saw with the previous bollard system was a difficulty in operating them when it really counted, and it was an issue for us.
How impervious are these wedge barriers to vehicular attacks? Do you know?
I don't know the specifics on the wedge barriers, but it's more than what has been discussed about the new bollards. Anything can be defeated. Yeah. Now, what I would say is this: when we talk about completely defeating a vehicle at 10 miles an hour, we're not addressing the layers of security, which could be a vehicle might be going 15 or 20 miles an hour and hit a 10 mile an hour bollard and be disabled to the point where your layer of security, your police officers at every intersection, are going to be right there and they're going to neutralize whatever threat while this person is trying to, you know, continue to use a vehicle that may have had a wheel ripped off, may have had the oil pan ripped off, may have had, you know, a significant amount of damage done to it without being what, you know, security experts might call completely defeated.
And along those lines, let's go to Archer barriers now, which do have a feature in them that they get tangled up under the vehicle. Is that right or not?
Correct. They get tangled under the vehicle and then they dig into the street. And they do a massive amount of damage to a vehicle. I think the Archers are again, a great product that we've had luck with in the past on the side streets. We've never deployed them on the sidewalks. That's something we have to look at post New Year's. The sidewalk issue, you know, Canal is a much wider sidewalk at Bourbon than the rest of the French Quarter. So that's something that we're going to have to take into account. And I think that's something we can do immediately. But what I will say about the Archers is they're, I believe, 400 to 500 pounds each. Mm-hmm. And so moving them is another, you know, that's a significant effort that has to take place a couple of days before. And then once they're deployed, moving them takes usually 2 to 3 people.
It would seem to me that the wedge barrier would be the optimum solution, but even then, having worked as a purchasing agent, I know that on ferry boats, ram fails, and then those have to be replaced, and that could lead to the ramp either being able not to be raised or lowered. Are they terribly expensive? Is that something the city is looking at, Colin?
Yeah, they're sold in 10, 12, and I believe 15 or 16 foot widths. Mm-hmm. They start at about $75,000 and top out at about $100,000 per unit.
So you'd be talking about a significant investment here, and then there's maintenance and everything.
It will be, but you know, we've discussed it. I know I've counted that we need about 24 of them if we wanted to do every intersection. And I'm going to pursue that. I'm just telling you right now, I'm going to pursue it.
So, like I'm saying,
but
it would
again,
seem
maintenance,
as though
maintenance storage, you know, when they're not in use, is something that we have to have our entire team on board with to make sure that everybody has a role in that.
So, am I heading down the right direction with the wedge barriers? Seem like the best solution at this, or at least one of the more effective solutions at this point?
I think the wedge barriers are the best solution for the side streets to limit that traffic from coming in to get onto Bourbon in the first place. And I think a well-placed bollard system, you know, even 20 miles an hour if we want to step up from the 10. And again, this is, you know, this is my initial thoughts on this. There's going to be experts coming here who know a heck of a lot more than this than me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that being able to keep vehicles out of that area in the first place from getting onto Bourbon Street is going to be the best thing.
I know your time's limited, Colin, but I do want to get to this. Now that we've looked back, let's look forward to Super Bowl, to Mardi Gras, this Sear 1 now as opposed to Sear 2. And you mentioned, you know, the experts that are just as well-versed in this world experts as they can be. And my fear goes to copycats and those kind of things. What changes? What's likely to look different for Mardi Gras, for the Super Bowl, for Mardi Gras, especially since that's what we do every year, and also into the future with the French Quarter?
So you've covered many Super Bowls. That is a very, very, we've been planning for Super Bowl for a year. I think we need to look heavily at the French Quarter again, based off of what we saw on New Year's Eve. But the amount of resources that are here around the city, in the French Quarter, at the Convention Center with the fan experience, and of course the Superdome, which is basically completely shut off with concrete and sterilized 6-7 days before the game. I don't think there's going to be a lot of modification that's going to be required for Super Bowl, but yesterday being told that we're going to have our entire major parade season from February 21st through March 4th covered as a Sear 1 as well, I believe essentially means that a lot of those resources and even more that you see for Super Bowl are going to stay in town essentially from February 9th, the game, all the way through Ash Wednesday. And so we're going to get back on the drawing board. This month's going to be absolutely furious with preparations of what Mardi Gras is going to look like. I'm very interested to see what the experts say about our parades. You know, what I will say and caution on is I don't want to see our way of life or our culture be, you know, decimated by this terrible act. But, you know, having a 5-mile long parade and on one day having 2 5-mile long parades through both the heart of the entire city, you know, those are difficult propositions to try and and protect completely to a level that maybe people might be expecting right now. So what I'm saying is, you know, we're going to do everything we can to preserve Mardi Gras, but we're going to have to look at what these experts say as well.
It's 9:24 on WWL. Let me do a quick reset here. We're talking to Colin Arnold, the director of Homeland Security, about the Bourbon Street attack. We're talking about wedge barriers, archer barriers, and bollards. There's also some S-10 ratings that are involved here. The wedge barriers seem like the most effective and best thing to me. In certain instances, when it comes to blocking off side streets, they are expensive. They do have to be maintained. And if you're trying to envision this, picture a ferry ramp that goes up and down. They're operated by battery, but it's a hydraulic ram, almost like a shock absorber, but that is intentionally extended and then retracted, that raises and lowers the barrier, and that can be done within a matter of seconds. These archer barriers are 700 pounds each and can be deployed, but it is labor-intensive and can be labor-intensive. Canal Street has a wider sidewalk than does the French Quarter, and then there are bollards, and the bollards that were installed that slid back and forth, I forgot the phrase they used for those, but they were getting clogged up by all different kinds of things and were difficult to maintain. And there goes to an S-10, S-20, S-30 rating as to how strong they are, and they're reviewing which ones to put out. But then back in the day, and Ronald Surpass mentioned this to us last week, on Thursday I think it was, that there are drop-in bollards. Those come in different strengths and weights, 44 pounds, 88 pounds, and the heaviest are more than a man or two men could do, or women, whatever, people. They would have to be done by machine. So we'll continue the conversation with Colin Arnold when we come back. And terrorism, keep in mind, you know, they look for the weakest link and then attack it. I think it's easy. And there are going to be some reviews on this to look back and say, well, this shoulda, that coulda. But I also want to talk to Colin when we come back, having been in D.C. over the weekend, about that city being locked down and trying to walk around and get around barricades. Everybody complained when the streets of the French Quarter were being repaired and you had to walk around all of these different obstacles. There are trade-offs that are involved with everything. We'll pick up the conversation when we come back. Tommy Tucker, Colin Arnold, our guest, our friend, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. We'll be back in a flash on WWL. 9:30 now, talking to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans, about the Bourbon Street attack and about what happens moving forward. As you said, Colin, this is not our first Super Bowl. We've been through many of them, the NFL and the FBI and Lord knows who else takes over. Those of you that remember the first Super Bowl after 9/11, it was crazy, yeah. Right? It was nuts.
Yeah, I was out there. It was wild, and the amount of security. And I expect you're going to see that at a minimum for this Super Bowl.
And again, Colin, you know, I don't assign blame to anybody about anything. It's easy to go back and second guess whether it's a football game or whether it's something of a definitely more serious nature like this. I know you guys are going to look at all of this. I mentioned earlier before the break that the idea of terrorism, right? Box cutters on planes. I think we looked it up last week. What the 9/11 attacks ended up costing were like $8 or $9 trillion, I think, the average. And if you look at efficacy of attacks, and I'm not congratulating anybody for this, I'm just saying nobody thought of box cutters on planes. And as a result, ISIS found that weak link and has subsequently cost $8 to $9 trillion to offset it, shoe bombers, et cetera. You live and you learn. That's all you can do, right? That's the cost of living in a free society. I mentioned earlier that, you know, people are talking about sidewalk, this and that and the other thing. I was in D.C. over the weekend, and that city is locked down tighter than a crab's rear end, and rightfully so. But it was not as easy to walk around as it normally is with walking past barriers and this and that and the other thing. New Orleans, like D.C., is an extremely walkable city. We pride ourselves on that. A lot of people were not happy about the street renovations in the French Quarter and what they had to walk around on Bourbon Street. So there is always a trade-off between convenience, between the city being walkable and security. And also, I would add, as you mentioned earlier, just completely changing everything because a terrorist or somebody wants you to live in fear. It's a balance, isn't it?
It is a balance. And, you know, as far as We hear all the time, and I would agree that, you know, the NOPD, the New Orleans Police Department, is one of the best in the country, if not the best, in dealing with large crowds. I think that the secret to that, or the main element that makes that possible, is they give people breathing room. You can ingress, you can egress, you can come and go. We've had other cities come here to learn from NOPD about crowd control, and their initial desire is to pen everybody in these other cities. And when you start penning people in with barricades, bollards, all of these types of physical security features, once the partying starts and the drinking starts and people start feeling like they're getting crowded in with each other, that's when bad things start to happen just among crowds. And so, you know, there is a rhyme and a reason towards leaving certain areas available for people to step out of the way, to get out of the area, to walk into a business, to get, you know, somewhere else than where they are. And the more you limit that, I think you also can create some problems as well. I think that, you know, I'll say this about the bollard system that's been out there. The one that we've had the problems with is just as far as maintenance and cleaning and, you know, these types of things. It's a very good system, and the vendors were very good with us. They came back down and tried to assist us with developing some plastic covers to go over the tracks to try and limit the amount of debris that was getting in there. But it was fighting an uphill battle for a year and a half to almost 3 years of trying to keep those clean and operational. Also, the way they were put in, we had delivery trucks hitting them frequently and destroying them. So then we were ordering more parts. It was just a very difficult situation to deal with. I think that the thought process behind them being installed, if you'll remember at the time in 2017, there was a lot of discussion about the French Quarter becoming just a pedestrian mall completely. And that didn't fly. Obviously the residents, business owners, and our residents in New Orleans did not want that to occur. So those are, you know, these aren't things that we just haphazardly have put up. There's a lot of thought to them. A lot of people have asked why we didn't have the bollards that just go all the way into the street like you see in a lot of other locations, New York City, Washington, D.C., places like that. The engineers told us because of the age of the French Quarter, we only had about a foot of subsurface that we were able to use to put in any type of system for bollards. And so when you talk about something that goes all the way into the street, you need 36 to 52, even 72 inches of clearance in order to do that. And we just, it was not an engineering possibility to do something like that. And so, we're limited in certain ways, and in other ways, there are things we can do, and that's what I think we should focus on. To your point, I think the wedges, more wedges, I think is an opportunity that I want to take as soon as possible.
Colin, as you said that, I remembered not too long ago, back in the day, you know, going to French Quarter when I would do that on Bourbon Street, and getting caught in the wave of the crowd going one way or the other with my then girlfriend. And it was terrifying because we got pressed up against a barrier, and it was just the ebb and flow of the crowd with how packed it gets in there. And I think before people start thinking that they have the solution with this barrier or that barrier or a bollard, they need to remember what it's like when that French Quarter is jam-packed and the crowd starts moving. And if the crowd decides to move in or out very quickly, and somebody texted in and said bollards are not an impediment to pedestrian traffic, and I strongly disagree with that, especially...
Yeah, I would disagree with that, too. If two or three people trip against bollards... You have stampedes that you've seen in soccer matches in the United Kingdom. You've seen stampedes of people trying to get out of a place that's on fire.
And going to my example about being trapped against a wedge, when you have a whole block full of people trying to get through and there are impediments, that's where the backups start. That's where people start running into each other. And to your point, that's when people get trampled.
Right.
So let's talk about...
It's complicated.
It is complicated. You know, people don't realize that. And it is also a trade-off. And I saw Russell Honoré retweet the old thing about, you know, if you give up your liberty in exchange for security, you gain neither.
You get neither.
All right. Yeah. I don't think anybody wants to give up Mardi Gras as we know it because one idiot decides to do something that they shouldn't do.
And I want to be clear. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
You know, I want to be very clear. We're going to have Mardi Gras, and we're going to honor our traditions that we do in this city, and what makes this city different, unique, and great. There are things that we can do, and we're going to take every piece of advice that we're given and use every asset that can be brought to bear to do that. I absolutely am assured of that, but I don't think we're going to have to substantially or will. I don't think the public will be behind substantially changing our traditions because of this terrible act.
And again, if you don't feel safe, you don't have to go. That's always an option that's open to you. And I don't mean to sound flippant about that at all. Everybody.
No, I want everybody to go.
I do too, Colin. And
there
is
something like that. Yeah,
that's not the point I'm making. And the other thing is, I wanted to get to is if you look at parades and safety, what happened with Endymion had nothing to do with a vehicular accident. It had nothing to do with terrorism or planning or anything else. It was a drunk driver, right?
Right, right. And that's, you know, so these things can happen intentionally or inadvertently. You know, you've seen what happened in Endymion where the driver ran into the crowd on Orleans. That was accidental because of intoxication. And then, a year later, the incident on Esplanade Avenue after the parade, people just riding their bikes and walking home down Esplanade. And the same thing, a person hit several people, you know, and it's one of those things. You know, again, we have areas of the parade route on St. Charles where second lines can get out of control and we can get shootings, you know, and these are all the things that we do everything we can do to try and mitigate these, try to prevent them. It's a heck of a job to try and do.
Colin, no outside public event, especially something the size of Mardi Gras, which they've tried to do, and going back to NOPD, they've tried to do in other cities. They tried to do it in Seattle. They tried to do it in Austin. It failed. It didn't
work. Thinking of the Seattle example in particular. That was where the Seattle police wanted to completely, because I'm from Seattle originally. I've lived here 28 years. They wanted to completely barricade in Pioneer Square, one of the old kind of downtown squares in the city, and have a huge party where nobody could get in and nobody could get out. And they ended up having fatalities from both from trampling and I believe from stabbings.
There is no way to make an event like Mardi Gras 100% absolutely positively safe from anything. I mean, let's be honest, it's not going to happen. Fair?
Right. I think that's fair. I think that we have to do our best, though, to everything that we can.
And I'm not saying that you don't. I'm just saying that for people that think there's going to be a catch-all, for people that think there's going to be a 100% solution, there is not. Real quick, and I appreciate your time, I do, and you're being so candid. When it comes to the difference between a SEER 1 and SEER 2 event, what does that mean with what the president said yesterday and moving forward with Mardi Gras? What is New Orleans? What does it mean for Mardi Gras as what's going to be different? I guess what I'm trying to fumble through here to hurry up and get you off because I know you're busy.
No, we're good. It's the Department of Homeland Security in Washington has an Office of Special Events that actually rates every special event in the country. We report every single festival and up to 250 that we have in New Orleans. My office reports to DHS every year in a big list. And they rank all of these. And they rank them based on, you know, the threat. They rank them based on the attendance, expected attendance. They rank them based on whether they're indoor, outdoor, whether there's an admission. A lot of different factors come into this. And they come up with a ranking, a SEER ranking, Special Event Assessment Rating. The SEER rankings go from 1, which is a Super Bowl or a national-level special event, down to 5, which is a, you know, pretty much local, smaller festival, one of our weekend types of, I would say Beignet Festival, as an example, is a SEER 5. You know, anticipated attendance 25,000 to 50,000. There's a huge amount of difference in when you get from SEER 3 to SEER 2, and then from SEER 2 to SEER 1. In the United States last year, there were approximately 20 SEER 1 and SEER 2 events in the country out of, I want to say, 12,000, maybe 15,000 special events that were tracked. So there's a very small amount that get this overwhelming amount of federal support. What we'll get from and then when you're at a SEER 3, you get very limited, really no federal support. Now, I want to caveat that by saying we've developed relationships in our city with our federal partners that even in a SEER 5 event, I can call the Coast Guard and they'll put an extra patrol boat on the river if there's something in Waldenburg Park. They work with us very well. I mean, we have great relationships. And they're doing that just based on they're in the community too and they want to see these things be safe. But when you get into the SEER 2 and SEER 1, that's when the federal government assigns a federal coordinating team of law enforcement at the federal level that comes in, works with us, plans with us, and says, what federal assets do you need from us? And so typically it's people, as in like tactical teams and federal law enforcement teams, extra SWAT teams. You may not see them out visibly, but they're typically kind of behind the scenes, ready to go in case they need a quick response to a major incident. They've helped us with light towers. They've helped us with barricades. They've helped us with communications, making sure that we get extra cell towers in the city so that people can use their phones. There's a lot of different chemical, biological, and detection assets that come into town for these. And so the difference between a SEER 2 and a SEER 1, I think, is just more. You're going to get more of these types of assets that are going to be made available to you to use. And so for Mardi Gras, you know, for years, Mardi Gras was not even recognized as a SEER 2 or a SEER 3. It took until 2019, and I give this mayor credit, and my predecessor, Colonel Terry Ebert, a lot of discussion about, have you seen the crowds that we get for Mardi Gras weekend? And then they finally realized this is a huge, huge event. And they considered Mardi Gras just Fat Tuesday, not all of the days surrounding with all of our major 33 major parades that we do, float parades. And so now they're not only realizing that the Wednesday before Ash Wednesday, all the way through that weekend, through Fat Tuesday, was a SEER 2 for the last several years. It'll now be a SEER 1. They're even extending that to the first weekend of parades when we start on that Friday before, on the 21st of February. So we're going to have a lot more. Look, drone technology has increased to the point now where we have concerns about, I was obviously seen it in the national headlines about unknown drones flying over cities and people's property and different events. And that's something we're concerned about and working with the federal government on too. And a lot of the things, a lot of the techniques and equipment that they have that can help us with that are going to be made available through these SEER designations.
Colin,
it's a good thing. It's a good thing for the city. It's a very good thing.
One thing I'd like to wrap this up with is that the walkability of the city, when it comes to things like Super Bowl, when it comes to New Year's Eve, when it comes to French Quarter Fest, which is huge, as you well know, Jazz Fest, the French Quarter itself, Mardi Gras, I don't see any of that change. I don't want to see anything under lockdown. I don't want to have to go through a security gate to go through a Mardi Gras parade or anything else. But with that being said, you do have to keep it safe. And this is an extremely complicated thing to try to reach a balance between these two. What thought can you leave us with in terms of planning and preparation that things, I think this is going to be the safest year in the history of the city. Maybe wrong, I don't know. But in terms of security when it comes to these events, but the challenge is to keep them fun. Accurate?
Yes, and we're going to do everything we can to do that and provide as much safety as possible for people that want to enjoy these events. You know, like I said, Super Bowl is a year in the planning, over a year at this point, and it's ready to go. I think there's going to have to be some of the things that we look at in the French Quarter that we're going to have to take a very strong look at with these new resources coming in. I think there'll be a lot more work on Mardi Gras and the parades and just what we can do there. I think that better intelligence on the front end, although that's a very difficult, and we've heard that from the federal authorities with this this terrorist that did this attack on New Orleans, you know, it's very difficult to find these lone wolves. But if we can get any inkling of something that may be brewing out there, that's a huge part of the strategy of prevention as well.
Colin, I can't thank you enough. A very factual, a very clear, understandable explanation of everything that's going on. God bless you. Keep up the good work. We'll talk to you again, all right?
Thank you, Tommy.
You bet. Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. Easy to second guess. And I'll just say quickly, watch what you ask for in terms of security, because you might just get it. We'll be back. WWL.